This is the first perspective on practice, the science of meditation. There's a second perspective on practice which complements this, and that is the understanding that meditation is an art. It's not just a science. It doesn't have to do just with precision and exactness. There's also an art to it. And it's an art in the sense of balancing all the different parts of ourselves. We see not only precisely and exactly what it is that's going on, but in this art of meditation, we also begin to explore how we're relating to what's going on. And so in this sense, meditation is the art of relationship. It's the art of true relationship, of discovering the nature of relationship. And as we discover this in our practice, in our own experience, we begin to be able to apply this art to our relationships in the world, with the world. There are many ways we can relate to experience. There's not just one way. Now, we may be aware of what's present in the moment, but we could be aware with a wide range of reactions in the mind, of likes, of dislikes, of judgments, of preferences, of wanting, of not wanting, of condemning, of irritation, of boredom. We might be relating with a lot of love, with a lot of compassion, with a lot of balance. The way we relate to experience conditions our understanding. Just a few examples of how this happens in our practice, moment to moment. We can see it very clearly even with something as simple as the breath. One would think, oh, just the breath, that's easy. Not much problem with relating meditatively to the breath. But as you watch breath after breath, and you're watching the nature of the mind, begin to see certain subtleties. Do we want it to be a certain way? Are we trying to make the breath a certain way? What is the quality of the effort to hold the attention? Now we sit and we're watching the in and out, feeling it, feeling the rise and fall, and we're making the effort to hold our attention on it. What is the quality of that effort? Sometimes people, the quality of this holding is too lax, it's too slack, and so it falls away. Sometimes it's too tight, we're clutching at the breath in order to hold it. What happens when we clutch at it? Everything gets tense, gets tight. An image which came to mind, which you can try, see if it serves you. Just imagine as you're holding the breath, imagine yourself holding a baby. How would you have to hold it? You wouldn't want to hold it too loosely, and you wouldn't want to crush it. You want to hold it with steadiness and softness. Hold the breath like you're holding a baby. Finding the balance in terms of being with the breath. Can we rest in the simple awareness of it? Holding our attention in this balanced way. This is the art of the practice. We need to learn this art. It's not something that we either have or we don't have. We need to practice it. We can see clearly the nature of relationship to experience, not only with the breath, but sometimes even more clearly in relationship to painful or uncomfortable feelings in the body or the mind. Probably even this first day, or especially this first day, you know, you're sitting and at different times, different painful feelings come. The body gets uncomfortable. What do we do with this? What do we do with this feeling of unpleasantness? There are a lot of different ways pain or unpleasantness, both in the body and in the mind, emotional pain, can be related to. Common way is self-pity. We sit here feeling sorry for us. Oh, poor me. You know, everybody else in the whole room is in ecstasy, and I'm the only one with knee pain. So it's just to look, to see if that's the pattern, you know, that we're conditioned to. Sometimes this complaining mind. We're just annoyed by things. One of the classic examples of this was a retreat on the West Coast. And there were a lot of planes flying overhead. And the managers got a note from one yogi to please write to the airline to see if they would change their flight patterns. This, in professional circles, we call this yogi mind. That was that person's way of relating to the unpleasantness, you know, of those ongoing sounds. Change the flight patterns. Sometimes there's fear of pain, fear of unpleasantness. You know, we begin to feel a pain, and there's a contraction because we're afraid to feel it. Sometimes we start bargaining with it. I'll watch you, I'll be with you, I'll be mindful if you leave, if you go away. That also is not mindfulness, that's not awareness. That's a bargain. It's also possible to relate to unpleasantness, to difficulty, to pain, with a quality of softness, with a quality of openness. This is possible, we can learn this. We can learn to settle into the pain, the discomfort, the unpleasant emotion. Can we relax behind it? Can we open to it? Can we feel it? Are we willing to do that? There's an important discrimination to make here, and that is the distinction or discrimination between pain as a danger signal and what could be called Dhamma pain. Because sometimes pain is actually trying to tell us something. It's a signal that's saying, danger. You put your hand in fire and it begins to burn, be painful. You don't want to just say hot, hot, hot. You want to take your hand out. There are other kinds of pain which start to reveal themselves when we get quiet. It could be the accumulation of some kind of tension in the body. It could be some deeper level of understanding the body. What characterizes this pain is that no matter how intense it is, and sometimes you can be sitting with the most intense pain, and then you move a quarter of an inch, or you stand up and begin walking, and it goes away. If it goes away as soon as you change position or stand up and walk, then it is not a danger signal. It's fine. It's just opening to something deeper that's there. If you find that there's a pain which is becoming cumulative, you know, maybe there's a pain in the knee, sometimes you get up and you walk for a few minutes, it's fine. Maybe sometimes is the experience that keeps getting worse and worse and tighter as the day and days go on. Then it may be that you're straining it too much and you need to alter your sitting position a bit. So play with this awareness, this distinction. With time, it becomes very clear which it is. Just we know intuitively this is pain is a danger signal, this is meditative pain, it's okay. So we can see our relationship to experience, we can see it in relationship to the breath, we can see it in relationship to pain or discomfort, the different ways we relate to it. We can see the relationship to experience very clearly with our thoughts and images in the mind. How do we relate to different kinds of thoughts? One way we relate, you know, with pleasant fantasies, pleasant daydreams, we just sit and we enjoy them. You know, you sit and the mind starts going off in some pleasant reverie. The hour goes fast, you get, oh, that was a nice sitting. You know, we're just kind of enjoying the reverie, the daydreaming of it. That's one kind of relationship. It's the relationship of getting lost. We can see it in relationship to the judging mind. You know, one of the most common patterns of thoughts that arise in people, and it's startling to see this, and to see it clearly, is the prevalence of the judging mind. We have judgments about everything. Judgments about ourselves, judgments about other people. It's really interesting in the just in yogi world, in meditator's world. You know, you might be walking very slowly and very carefully, and somebody races by you. What are they doing? Can't they be more mindful? Can't they be paying attention? And then half an hour later, you'll be stuck behind somebody who's creeping along. You know, what are they doing? Showing off? Can't they just be normal? It's like this judging mind, this comparing mind. It just takes anything. And there's many opportunities for it to rise here. To learn how we're relating to judging, to these kinds of thoughts, very important. If we believe them, if we invest in them, if we identify with them, it's feeding them. And so it just goes on and on. If we condemn the judging mind, if we condemn ourselves for having them, we're feeding them. They go on and on. We need to learn a way of relationship that sees it, acknowledges it, lets it go. The thought itself is not a problem. There's one Zen master that Carol mentioned last night. He said something very profound to this point. He said, it's not the thoughts that are the problem, it's our tardiness in becoming aware of them. And so what we do is simply foster a clear awareness of what's happening. Relationship to the breath, what is it? Is it too tight? Is it too slack? Are we expecting something? Our relationship to unpleasantness, to pain, pain in the body, pain in the mind. Do we feel self-pity? Do we feel fear? Do we feel the complaining mind? Do we start bargaining with it? Or can we be open? Can we be soft? The relationship to thoughts. Do we simply get lost in them and start enjoying them? Do we condemn them? All of this is to explore. It's just to see what is it that's going on in our lives. How are our lives unfolding? We see the nature of this relationship with regard to the practice itself. What's our attitude about the practice, about the meditation? A very common pattern is for expectation to come disguised as effort. We think we're making right effort. We're arousing the energy. We think we're on the right track. But yet, it might well be expectation which is disguised as effort. We're practicing in order for something to happen. We're watching the breath in order to have some experience, instead of simply being there in the moment. Be very watchful about this in order to mind, because already that puts us into the future. It creates a tension. So the question for us, how can we become aware of all of these different relationships? How can we become aware of all of these different reactions in the mind? Because sometimes they're very subtle. They may not be obvious at all. How can we find a true and balanced relationship to our experience? That's the question. There are a few helpful things that can be worked with in the practice to find this true relationship. One is to be watchful about the tone of the noting. The tone of the mental note will reveal to you how your mind is relating to the object. Is the tone harsh? Is it judgmental? Is it impatient? Is it soft? Is it allowing? And what's magical about it, if you notice that the tone of the mental note is too harsh, it's too angry, it's too judgmental, by simply changing the tone of the note, I think you will find that the quality of the mind state changes. It's like a simple adjustment that we can make. That's one thing to work with and pay attention to. There's another very useful feedback in the course of the day, both in sitting and walking and moving around, and that is to watch for the feeling of rushing. And rushing has nothing to do with how fast or slow you're going. People can be moving very slowly and rushing. The feeling of rushing has to do with being ahead of ourselves, with toppling forward. It's as if we're out there to where we want to get to instead of back in our bodies. As you go through the day, pay attention to this. As soon as you feel the sense of rush, just stop for a minute, settle back, relax back into the body, start again at whatever speed. But you can do it from a place of balance rather than a place of anticipation. So it's a tremendously useful feedback or signal. And the last great help in helping us to find a true relationship is something that is often ignored by us, and that is recognizing the times of struggle. When we have that sense of struggling, we're struggling in the sitting, we're struggling in the walking, in moving about, what struggle means, what struggle is telling us, is that in that moment, there is non-acceptance of what is present. We're not accepting something. So stop for a moment, open up. It's as if you ask yourself the question at that time, okay, what's happening now? You know, you may be sitting, trying to be with the breath, and you're just getting tighter and more sense of struggle and frustration. That is a signal. That's saying something is happening that I'm not open to. So stop for a moment, settle back, open up. What is happening now? Maybe there's some pain that's not being acknowledged. Maybe there are a lot of thoughts that we're not acknowledging and we're just in a conflict with. Struggle means non-acceptance. So it's telling us something very useful. It's saying, stop, open up. What is happening? So meditation is an art, has to do with this willingness to open. Meditation is an art is the willingness to soften into experience. It's the sense in the mind, it's okay. Whatever it is that's arising, it's okay. Let me feel it, let me be with it, let me understand it. You can use that as a mantra, a Vipassana mantra. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay, reminding oneself. In the art of meditation, there are the qualities of willingness, the qualities of interest, the qualities of gentleness. There's the quality of appreciation. These are the same qualities that are in the art of relationship in life. What do we need in our relationships? We need appreciation, we need openness, we need interest. That's what we can be learning here in each moment, with the breath, with the thought, with the sensation. How are we relating to it? One of the great empowering energies of practice is interest. Is taking interest in who we are, in what we are. We so take for granted the most profound things in our lives. You know, you've sat here now, some of you just for a day, watching the breath in, out, in, out, in, out. I'm sure at times you must have felt, this is so boring. You know, if I have to watch one more breath. But if your head were underwater, how would you feel about the breath? If somebody were holding your head underwater, it would not be boring. It would become the most compelling thing in your life. Isn't it of interest? If we stop breathing, we stop living. Every breath is sustaining our life. This is not poetry. This is actually true. Every breath is sustaining our life. How can it not be of interest to us to explore what is happening energetically, what is happening in this whole system with every breath? It's not insignificant. What is a thought? These thoughts which so dominate our lives, these thoughts which enslave us, what are they? What is a thought? You know, we have billions of them. Do we ever stop to examine, to look at what is it? What is its nature? And what is an emotion? This is the quality of interest that we can bring to the practice. Because this is our life we're talking about. It's not something abstract. This is who we are, what we are. So meditation is an art, is this willingness and it's this interest in what's happening. And what we find is that the closer we bring our attention to experience, the more interesting it gets. And we're all a package of different qualities. We all have such a wide range of qualities in the mind and qualities in the heart, and some are pleasant and some are unpleasant and some are difficult and some are easy. The art of meditation is that willingness to open to all of it with a quality of acceptance, with a quality of interest. Okay, let me see it, let me feel it, let me be with what's happening. This is the process of discovery, of investigation. And when we do this, we create this inner spaciousness, a little bit of inner ease. What happens is that we begin to see ourselves with a bit more sense of humor. You know, we see this whole ridiculous show of what's going on and this whole package of qualities. We begin to smile a little bit. It's very helpful in practice. Practicing with a little bit of a smile. So the science of meditation has to do with the precision, with the exactness. So we know exactly what it is that's going on. The art of meditation has to do with the way we're relating to the experience, of how open, of how soft, of how willing we are to be with it. Through the development of both of these, of both the science and the art, we come to a deeper and fuller appreciation of this whole experience we call ourselves, we call life.